Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now, going across the country, talking to people, covering the stories where they're happening. We call it the 2 minute drill, and it starts this go round. In Nashville, Tennessee, Chase McCabe, ESPN 102.5 is there. Chase, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Seren. How are you?
Doing very well. Is all back being right with the world since the Titans won in OT against the Ravens in Baltimore?
The Baltimores, the Ravens, whatever you want to call them. I would say that things are feeling pretty good today here in Nashville after that one. Now, the only worry is the health of the team, because it seems like key players are dropping like flies for the Tennessee Titans. But what a game that was. I know that a lot of people around the country were watching that one yesterday. We had Jim Nance and Tony Romo as a part of the broadcast team, and the Titans, being down like they were, just did not give up. They battled back. They stuck with the game plan. Derrick Henry was a big part of that, and somehow, some way, forced overtime and get the win. So it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, and how good, what do you expect out of the Titans here for the finish? They've got the Colts coming up next. That's a big, big game for the Tennessee Titans. They're getting 3.5 at Indy. Indy won the first matchup. Whoever wins this is going to be in the driver's seat, especially if Indy wins it. They'll really have basically a game and a half lead on the division. What do you expect happens in the next game?
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one. I mean, it because of what happened 2 weeks ago, because of what I just said with all the injuries with the Titans, I mean, this one is even more important. But I think it's truly for the division. I mean, the winner, in my mind, wins the AFC South. I still think, no matter what, you know, the Titans especially are in a good position to be a playoff team. But as you know, the AFC is so close together right now that I think they need this one more than ever. What do I think happens? That's a tough one. I think that the Titans have a momentum on their side. I think they don't want to lose twice to the Colts, so I think they find another way to squeak it out and get a victory on the road.
I'm curious what the view of the Titans is compared to the Chiefs. I know what we think about the Chiefs here in Kansas City. What's the view from Nashville? Is it a team that they can't beat? Is it a team that they just need to play good football, and yes, they can beat them? How do you measure the Titans against the Chiefs?
Well, I think you have to measure the Titans against the Chiefs, because if you want to get to where you want to go, you have to get through teams like Kansas City and Pittsburgh. And I think we'd all agree that right now, at least, it's those two teams at the top of the heap. And I just – the way they match up, the way the defense has played with or without injuries, I don't see it right now. That's just my personal opinion. I know you'd have diehard Titans fans that can say, oh, we can beat anybody. But just looking at the matchup on paper, I think it would be very hard for this Titans team to beat Kansas City right now. But you never know. I mean, you look at what they did last year and the run they got on, and they got hot at the right time. That may very well happen. But I think it's going to be tough with just – because it's not just Mahomes, as you know. I mean, Kansas City is just – a completely loaded team, and it would just be a tough one right now today.
Okay, tell me, give me an update on where Jeremy Pruitt sits. He loses 30-17 to an Auburn team that's, you know, they've won some games. They haven't really beaten anybody of note, unless I'm forgetting somebody off the top of my head. But where do we sit now with Jeremy Pruitt and his future?
I mean, right now he's still the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. My guess with the way the buyout would be, he'll probably stay the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers, but I could see staff changes yet again. We'll see who's, you know, under center for them against Vanderbilt. But people around here, I know on our show today, we go to Knoxville every week, and they were saying probably could see Vanderbilt winning that game. And Vanderbilt has not won a game this year. They're playing inspired football. They played very tough against Florida, so I have no reason to believe why they wouldn't do the same against their in-state rival, which would be huge. If Vanderbilt beats Tennessee, they're going to to be calling for the head of Jeremy Pruitt, and I just don't know if the university is really going to be in position to make that change, given the financial climate and the fact that they signed into a contract extension.
Listen, the pandemic may keep a lot of guys employed beyond where they normally would be because of the loss of revenue that's coming to all these athletic departments. Yeah. Tell me about the basketball team. Number 12, UT is number 12 in the country, pausing their basketball activities right now, which I think it's going to be a start and stop season. We'll see if they end up pausing all of them until January at some point. But what are the expectations for Rick Barnes' club this year?
Well, I think they're pretty high, and they have to be. I mean, you know, now, like you said, who knows what this season is going to look like, and does that add, you know, I guess a little bit of the built-in excuse for a coach. But to me, Rick Barnes, I think, is a good coach, but there have been some things that you were hoping would happen with this program by now, and they haven't. He's recruited well, got a lot of talent there. They just haven't made the deep tournament runs like everybody is hoping that they would. And he hasn't been able to duplicate some of the success that he had at Texas. So, to me, that's winning SEC tournaments, or, you know, at least going far in SEC tournaments, going far in the NCAA tournament. And I think they have the horses to do it, but can they live up to that number 12 ranking right now? Only time is going to tell. But I think there is some pressure on him to get that done. We'll just see what COVID has to say about it.
Yeah, no doubt. Chase McCabe in Nashville. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great Thanksgiving and stay safe, my friend.
Hey, you too. I appreciate it.
She said the prettiest place on earth was Baltimore at night.
Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore, Maryland is next. Glenn, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Soren. How you doing, my friend?
Doing well. How are Ravens fans doing after a overtime loss to the Titans?
Not well at all. I have to keep checking to make sure that not everything is on fire, because it feels like it is. Obviously, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it. It's that, then coupled with the news today of positive tests and no J.K. Dobbins or Mark Ingram on Thursday night against the Steelers. It's a disaster right now. Now, this is the weird part, right? They've been competitive. They've lost three games that they were super competitive in. The only game where they really got their butts kicked, of course, was the Chiefs game earlier in the season. The three games they've lost in the last four, all games, the Steelers game, they absolutely had every opportunity to win that game at the end and didn't, and the game changed on a couple of terrible interceptions. The Patriots game played in a monsoon without Brandon Williams or Calais Campbell. You can sort of say, all right, that was a goofy game in which, you know, they get the ball back with a chance to go win at the end, and literally the heavens open up and you can't see 2 feet in front of you. And then this past week, they have an 11-point lead in the second half against the Titans, and the Ravens are supposed to be a team that's built to be able to win games and just finish off second-half leads, and it just all came apart with starting with a bad Lamar Jackson interception. And so, look, Lamar Jackson's play has not been good. There's no getting around it. He has not been good. They have made some puzzling decisions on top of that. The defense, I think, is the thing that's maybe the most surprising, to watch this defense really falter down the stretch, and the play where A.J. Brown, you know, carries four Ravens into the end zone with him at the end of the game. It's staggering. It's un-Ravens-like. It's not what you would expect. Things aren't over. It's a far long way from over, but, you know, they got a really daunting task going to Pittsburgh this week. They'll be depleted again, and it starts some of the mentality and the emotions around the building simply aren't good at the moment, as this is not a franchise that's used to losing three out of four games.
You're right, it's not over, but for some of us that like to have more than a rooting interest on certain things, it is almost under the 11.5, which some of us may have on the Baltimore Ravens. I'm not going to say who, but some of us might have it. Listen, you mentioned Lamar Jackson, and there's the rest of the season to play out, right, before they'll take all the information before they have to make a decision. But we've mentioned a number of times the contract issue, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's after 3 years that you make that decision. His numbers aren't terrible, but he's looking more like Jared Goff post-contract, Carson Wentz post-contract. Sure. And when you have those guys that really kind of started the trend, now Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes have followed that trend. But when you have those guys not playing, Goff just playing okay, Wentz playing poorly, where's the conversation about locking up Lamar Jackson?
It probably pushed off a year if I had to bet, Saran, at the moment. Look, I've tried poking around a little bit about that. I think the Ravens you know, in a weird place where they might want to go to the bargaining table at the end of this year if they're planning on ultimately doing it, and they are. They're going to get a deal done at some point. Whereas Lamar Jackson, almost certainly, this isn't the moment where you'd want to be going to the table. So the most likely scenario is that ultimately time is on their side, and while Lamar, I'm sure, would like to get silly money a little bit quicker, he's not poor right now. He's doing fine, and, you know, other than catastrophic injury, and I get that there is certainly an amount of risk, particularly considering his athleticism, his mobility, I think that probably the most likely scenario is that this ends up being pushed off a year and you revisit it after year four. Now, you know, look, Lamar could go on a run, and at some point he could, and there is no doubt that part of this conversation is that the Ravens have failed him by not putting nearly enough talent around him. That has been part of the issue here, and you know, their offensive strategy has been head-scratching this season. But as far as what it means for a deal, I'd say at the moment the most likely scenario, and maybe also better for everybody given the economics of COVID, is to say, we don't have to do this right now. We can wait another year and revisit it after year four. If at that point we're not trending in the right direction, then Lamar could think about, you know, holding out, something along those lines. But it seems like I think that was definitely going to be a conversation had Lamar put up a season like he did a year ago. Now I think it feels more likely that'll be a thing that they deal with after 2021.
Yeah, no doubt. And the other guys losing money are both coordinators who were hot candidates for jobs and may still be good candidates for jobs come next year, but both of them not quite as shiny a candidate as they were at the end of last year. The Ravens getting three at Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving night for Thursday night football. One more subject, Indiana minus 14 at Maryland. Maryland had been paused. With what's going on, we talked about the Ravens. You mentioned it that they're away, all working remotely, and we'll see if any of the numbers rise on that. But Maryland getting back at it and showing some good signs. Now they get an Indiana club that totally validated what they've done to this point by giving Ohio State a scare. Do you give Maryland a shot?
I give them a shot, absolutely. I mean, look, this is a Maryland team that was – Penn State stinks. We all know that at this point. But nobody expected Maryland to play as well as they did, and Minnesota the same way. I give them a shot because Talia Tungavailoa has looked outstanding. I mean, he has just been absolutely excellent. But Indiana's defense is good. I know they give a bunch of points to Ohio State. That's the nature of playing Ohio State. They got a really good defense, and Michael Penix is legit. Maryland's defense, I think we still have just enough questions about. I mean, they still gave up a ton of points to Minnesota, even though they won that game. They gave up a ton of points to Northwestern. Obviously, Northwestern's really good. But I'm not ready to feel comfortable yet. If I had to bet that, I would probably still bet Indiana to cover. They are completely legit. But it could be a world in which Maryland scores a ton of points. It's the one thing I would say. Maryland looks capable of scoring points. They've got skill position players, and they definitely have a quarterback. Even as long as everybody's all right, as long as truly everyone is healthy coming out of this two-week break, they could score some more points than maybe you would have expected them to.
I think the Terps are number 26 in the basketball poll if you add on the others receiving yards. Is that it? Kind of, is that what you expect from them, to be just outside the top 25?
Yeah. They have to prove something. They just don't have anybody. Obviously, they lose Jalen Smith, who ends up going number 10 overall to Phoenix. They lose Anthony Cowan, who is sort of the straw that stirred the drink for this program. They've got to prove who it's going to be. They've got a bunch of pieces that are all nice. I mean, Ayala, a Wiggins. These are nice pieces, but nobody who has had to be assertive. The only guy that we've really seen assertiveness that returns on this roster is Daryl Morcel, who's a really incomplete player, not a great shooter, even struggles at the free throw line, but he loves the slash. He's capable of running the point. There are pieces here that you like. Chalmariel's up front, a nice player, but has dealt with a lot of injuries. I think until you see someone sort of seizing a role that says, you can count on me to score 16 to 22 points a night, and until we see a little bit more of the front court transfers, Jairus Hamilton in particular, I don't know that you can feel good about this group. They've got something. There's something there. They should be competitive. But to feel good about them, they'd have to prove it. And as you just alluded to in talking about Tennessee, Lord knows how that's going to work over these next couple of weeks and who's going to be on the floor when. They play a couple of games at home this week, or they're scheduled to play a couple of games at home, so they're not going out to one of these tournaments right now. But it's just going to be so stop and start that I don't know how easy it's going to be to get a rhythm going when you don't have that guy that you're taking your cues from.
No doubt. Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore. Always appreciate the time, buddy. Have yourself a great Thanksgiving and stay safe, my friend.
Saran, the very same to you, man.
It's that New Orleans.
Gus Kattengill, ESPN 100.3 in New Orleans, Louisiana. Gus, how are you, my friend?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Good. Were you Team Taysom or Team Jameis? Where did you stand when the announcement was made that Taysom Hill would get the start?
I was surprised with a lot of other people thinking that they were going to go with Jameis Winston, right, since he was the guy that came in and took those snaps at quarterback a week ago. I think the one thing that we discussed a lot that we thought would make sense, too, though, we could see it being Taysom Hill, because you would think by deductive reasoning he should know the offense, not only in terms of he's been here longer than Jameis Winston, but also the fact that he's in several position rooms and meetings and plays so many different positions on this team that you would think he would know the majority of that playbook, as opposed to Jameis Winston, who just got here. And, you know, obviously no mini camp and OTAs and stuff. So I get it as to where he went. But, yeah, I can tell you I was surprised only because of what we saw the week before. But last year at preseason against the Chargers, man, I thought he looked pretty good. And I said, look, I think he can do a little bit more than what Teddy can do in terms of his mobility and arm strength and stuff. So I'm not completely surprised.
Teddy being Teddy Bridgewater, who was there obviously before he went to Carolina. He's higher paid, right? Like the check says that, you know, almost like I would be upset with the front office if you give this guy the kind of money you gave him and then you immediately skip over him for a guy making almost the league minimum in Jameis Winston. Like the paycheck said he should be the guy. I mean, trust me, I'm with you. I'm stunned that he got the start. I told people there is no way this guy will ever start a game at quarterback for the Saints. So I'm stunned, but they're kind of backing up what they said when they gave him the $30 million deal.
You know, and I think it kind of goes to show as well to what it meant for him. I think that's something that stood out to me after the game yesterday. He spoke about, and he said, look, if you want me to be truthful, it was an emotional week for him. He said it was an emotional week for him in that he reflected on the long, winding road. And look, Sean Payton today, when he spoke with media, said flat out, make no mistake that when we first looked at him, we envisioned him as a quarterback. So he's been telling everybody since they got him from Green Bay that he's envisioned him to play quarter. We just don't want to believe him. It's incredible, literally every year and all the time. And to the point where I thought yesterday, you could almost look at it as testing or, you know, just Sean being Sean. But after the fourth or fifth straight question about Taysom Hill, which is normal after a game, people want to ask him about, you know, the play calling, the offense and all that. He flat out said, okay, this is the last Taysom Hill question before we start talking about the defense. So I think that's his way of trying to make everyone, including Taysom and the team, feel he's just like everyone else. He did what he had to do. Alvin Kamara said the same thing yesterday. Look, I mean, he's like us. And, heck, you go to a week ago, man, when he got hurt. He flat out said, Kamara did, that the game doesn't stop for anybody if you get injured. So they've adopted this mentality of, yes, Drew is different and special, and, hey, this is nice for Taysom, but they took the approach of that's his job. That's what he's supposed to do. And they're happy for him, but they think that it's something that he can do.
All right, let's turn our attention to the NBA and the Pelicans' moves. Very busy already in this very brief offseason. They get Lewis, the point guard from Alabama, in the draft. They pick up Bledsoe and Adams in what ended up being a four-player, four-team trade. Would we like what they did? Are people on board with what they did in moving Drew Holiday?
I think it was one of those things where for the last several weeks we all kind of looked at it as a win-win situation for the Pelicans and for Drew Holiday. The Pels are not anywhere near an opportunity or a chance to go win an NBA championship. But I do think that it's something where Drew is somebody that can really help perhaps another team win one for themselves. So I think when you look at it overall, it's probably one of those things that what if you can get some assets? What if you can get some players that can help you? And at the same time, another team gets help there as well. Look, you're not better by getting rid of Drew Holiday. He's your best on-ball defender. He's a leader. He's incredible in the community. So it had to be something that, you know, knocks their socks off and you would think would be beneficial. But it just makes sense, I think, from both parties to do it. And, look, it's kind of one of those things where you almost reward a player for being so loyal to your franchise over the last couple of years, especially after the AD debacle.
All right, last question, and it's one just for me, and that is, how's everybody doing in New Orleans? Every time I turned on one of the news channels, it seemed like a hurricane was barreling towards you guys. And we always think about you. How is everybody in New Orleans doing after such a tumultuous hurricane season?
Trust me, it felt like that over here as well. So, I mean,
even more so, I'm sure.
We got lucky, man. Look, it was a crazy season. Our neighbors to the left of us, man, to the west of us, and Lafayette, Lake Charles is still hammered. We got hit with the one, a two when it hit the shore, and it was a strong one. And here at my house, and I'm, to give you an idea, I'm maybe five stoplights away from the Saints and Pelican facility over by the airport. So that's kind of where the eye went, just to the east of us for that one. And we got hammered pretty good. I mean, we were out power 4 days and stuff like that. But, you know, we didn't have structural damage and things of that nature. A house or two had a tree fall on it. Lake Charles and Lafayette, it's going to be months for them to really recover over there. So it could have been a lot worse. If we would have got a Cat 4 like Lake Charles did, it would have been a completely different story, man. We got lucky, but it's one of those things you hate to say because that means somebody else doesn't get lucky. But it's been one of them summers. My wife's like, do you want to move? Should we go somewhere else? So it was a stressful time for sure this summer.
Well, we're thinking of you, buddy. We appreciate, all the great info we get from you. So when I hear that stuff's coming, we always think about our buddy Gus Kattengill down there and everybody down in New Orleans. It's such a great town. Love going down there for Final Fours and Super Bowls. And really won my heart. I really kind of used to turn my nose up at New Orleans. And then I spent some time, had a listener tell me, you're an idiot. You need to dig in. And he was right.
Right.
And I enjoy the town immensely now. So we're thinking about you guys. Have a great Thanksgiving. Hopefully stress-free in all aspects, at least as much as it can be in 2020. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again soon, my friend.
Yeah, for sure, man. Take care. And if you ever come down here, please look me up, man. I'd love to have a beer and a po' boy with you.
Oh, we will. We will indeed. Gus Kattengill in New Orleans. He's the man.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He's been a top NFL insider for 15 years.
We'll see how that's received.
Well, it's interesting, too, because this
Hold
is
on
all...
a second.
Adam's on the phone. That's how good he is.
He's been honored by Frank Caliendo.
Based on what I've been told, word around the league is many fans struggle understanding what an NFL insider is all about.
He's even been in the movies. He's Adam Schefter of ESPN in the program.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Seren Petro with you. Time to talk some football with Adam Schefter. He's brought to you by our friends at All Weather Decks. No better time than right now to call Cass and his team at 913-206-1974. You can check them out online at allweatherdecks.net. They'll be out to start your project in about 5 weeks. When the weather warms up, you're enjoying a new deck, patio, screened-in porch, whatever you want. Call 913-206-1974. Adam Schefter, welcome to our T-Mobile guest line. How are you?
Hello there, Seren. How you doing?
Doing very good, and certainly we're excited about what happened last night with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm curious, what do you hear? Do you ever hear anyone question Andy Reid's clock management these days?
I mean, I have not heard that. Listen, I think coaches, when they don't win, always get questioned. That's the nature. But they were able to come from behind. So, I mean, is that a ongoing topic of conversation in Kansas City today, Seren?
It's an ongoing topic of conversation of mine because I spent, 13 to 17 arguing with people that if you want to be a good clock manager, get yourself a Hall of Fame quarterback, and suddenly your clock management gets significantly better. And so it's been a pet peeve of mine, and I said, you watch if Andy Reid ever links up with a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, you watch how everybody's going to say, wow, look how much better Andy Reid is at the clock management. And it hasn't quite come full circle to that. I don't hear people, you know, dinging him for his clock management. And to your point, you know, you said when you don't win, you get criticized. Absolutely, yeah. Right? And the buck stops with the head coach. But it wasn't like he was a losing coach in Philadelphia yet when he came here, and he certainly wasn't a losing coach his first 4 years with the Chiefs before he handed the reins over to Patrick Mahomes. But you would have thought he was the biggest boob that has ever lived. I would go on shows whenever the Chiefs, whoever they would play, you know, you can play the Titans. Oh, Andy Reid. I mean, how bad is it with his clock management? Go on in New York as they're playing the Jets. God, how do you live with Andy Reid's clock management? You'd have thought he was the class dunce. And yet we don't hear anybody saying he's great at it, but at least they've stopped saying he's no good at it. And I was just curious if you ever hear what that level comes around on the national scene that you live in.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say all those things. I go back to the broadcast last night with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth saying that Andy Reid is going to go down as one of the greatest coaches in the game. So I guess that just goes to show you that even the greatest coaches in the history of the NFL have issues that if people look, they can find to criticize. I mean, to me, again, you win, the issues go away. They're winning. And so, again, you want to find an issue, I got it. But I don't hear it as a regular course of conversation, a regular topic that comes up. Like when we talk about the Chiefs or Andy Reid, talk about, you know, what a unique opportunity they have and how tough they're going to be to beat in the playoffs and whether they can, like, I don't recall somebody saying to me, I just don't know if Andy Reid is going to be able to handle the clock well enough to be able to win.
Yeah, I think the next time we'll hear it, I think people don't ever want to admit they're wrong. Right.
Okay.
And that there's maybe a variable outside of just the pure coaching. I mean, the way I've described it is there's a big difference when a guy drops back and, you know, we can go. They got the all 22s now where everybody can go be their armchair, you know, coach day after game and see what a quarterback may or may not have missed. But there were guys that were open that Alex Smith wouldn't take the downfield throw. He'd take the check down. I think it's because he didn't have the arm. He didn't maybe have the, you know, spatial awareness that Patrick Mahomes does, all the things that make Patrick Mahomes so great. And so he takes a check down, and the guy gets tackled in bounds, and it takes 28 seconds off the clock, and everybody says Andy Reid's an idiot for calling a play for 4 yards in the middle of the field when in reality he had a guy wide open. I just think it's amazing. You know, how it works. The shortest path, right, the easiest path to find a villain is generally how we work in sports. And I think Andy Reid is a classic example of that. And I think we're going to watch Bill Belichick's not going to be quite the clock manager he was without Tom Brady as well.
Yep. Well, yeah. Again, you know, it's Tom's not there this year, so people are questioning Bill on some of the things. And I've had this conversation with any number of head coaches through the years, Soren. You win the game, the questions and criticisms go away, no matter how much you win by, however close it is. You lose the game, you can be questioned fairly or unfairly on any decision you made the previous game. It's just the way the sport works. You win, you're brilliant. You lose, you're a moron. And there is very little gray area in between.
That's awesome. That's exact. We see it exactly the same way, right? We live in a world that's 0 or 100, complete moron or genius.
But you're on the head coach. You're on the head. They won, and so you're still finding fault now.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not finding fault. I've defended him. I'm finding fault. I want to know where the people are that spent all these years ripping Andy Reid, because I spent years defending Andy Reid, saying, listen, if you look at the all-22s, there are guys that are open, and Smith is not taking those throws. The problem does not lie with Andy Reid, because I'm going to get to something I heard on your network, on ESPN. I thought it was a great discussion this morning on Get Up, which I'll get to about what's going on with the Philadelphia Eagles. And that's what really got me thinking this way this morning is like, I've been waiting for some people to say, right? Like maybe we had it all wrong about Andy Reid. I think the narrative we will eventually get, and I thought it would come immediately following the Super Bowl, especially with the way that he managed the fourth quarter and down double digits to go up and win by double digits, that maybe we'd hear people, what I thought they'd say is Andy Reid has learned how to manage the clock, because nobody's going to say that they had it wrong previously. Now he's figured it out. He's caught up to me and now he understands how to manage the clock. And I think in reality, he always did. Like I said, my belief has always been to manage the clock, have a great quarterback.
But again, I get back to your initial point. You know, when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback, there's a lot of things that you are suddenly better at, right? So all of a sudden, and Andy Reid to me always has been an all-time great coach. Oh, but you get the quarterback, you win the Super Bowl. You win the Super Bowl, you're in the conversation. You're in the conversation, the praise and accolades keep pouring forth to you. And that's the point that Andy Reid is at in his career, where he was questioned long enough, and now he's being applauded and will continue to be applauded, rightfully so. And a lot of it is due to the fact that he's got a quarterback that's the best in the game. That's not to take away from anything he does. He has been, and always has been, a great football coach. But when you get a Hall of Fame quarterback, it shines a light on it. It makes it a lot easier to get the praise that you do. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking to Adam Schefter here in the program as he gets ready for a little Monday Night Football coming up tonight. You'll see it on ESPN. You'll hear it on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the home of the NFL. It's not very often I come away. Certainly the Chiefs, great win. You get a road win. Andy Reid would be the first guy to tell you that any road win is a great win in the NFL. And they all but seal the deal on the AFC West. I think, you know, one of the ESPN indexes had it at like 99% now that they will win the division. So that's mission accomplished, right? You went out there, mission accomplished. But I think maybe in the court of public opinion, right, and maybe realistically just for who they are, the Raiders may have gained more. The scenario that was written certainly here in Kansas City and by everyone I went on with in other towns was that the Chiefs were going to lay the beat down on the Raiders. It was payback for the victory bus, and an ass-kicking was coming, and the Raiders were going to receive it. And just by taking the Chiefs all the way to the wire and forcing them to have a game-winning drive coming down the stretch, and again, having the kind of success that they did offensively, you know, for a second consecutive time against the Chiefs defense, and for the Chiefs, after giving up 30-plus to the Carolina Panthers in their last time out and coming off a bye, extra time, I think the Raiders actually gained more from this game. And the Chiefs, you know, at least in maybe what the value of who they are, big picture, lost a little bit from this game. Does that sound fair?
The Chiefs lost a little bit from the game?
From the standpoint that they've now, for the reasons I just laid out, that they've given up, you know, big points. They couldn't stop the Raiders again. The defense was largely inept, right? It wasn't the coincidence that everybody seemed to want to make it against the Raiders. The Raiders clearly proved that they can move up and down the field on this Chiefs defense. And it also comes the week after the Panthers went for 30-plus. So yeah. I think there are real question marks about the Chiefs' defense, and the Raiders earned points. There are different starting points, but the Raiders earned some street cred by backing up that first win.
That, I think, is true. I think the Raiders definitely gained a little bit of street cred. They've beaten the Chiefs once. They've stayed with them and could have won in the other matchup. And so I think people look at the Raiders now as a viable playoff team, right? I think that they are – they're a tough out these days, and that, yeah. And they're an improved football team. So, yes, I agree with that. But, again, with the Chiefs, I would just say that they're setting themselves up to be in position to do what they want. And I think the more we look at this season in the AFC, there are some tough teams, like Tennessee is a tough out, and Buffalo and Miami, I think, are tough outs. But the fact of the matter is, right now, it looks like Pittsburgh and Kansas City are the class of the conference. It just does. And it looks like right now, for whatever it's worth, and we'll see how it plays out over the last six, seven games of the season, that Kansas City and Pittsburgh are on an AFC championship game collision course. Now, it doesn't always play out that way, but that's what it looks like. And if I'm the Chiefs, that's who I'm measuring myself with. That's who I'm comparing myself to right now. They're going to win the division. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to have the talent to go on an extended run. But it is stacking up in that conference to be those two teams as the best teams to advance far in the postseason.
And one of them is, though, going to have to play the extra game, right? That's what the new rule does is – it greatly rewards being the number one seed.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, so, and listen, the Chiefs had the Patriots and the Ravens out in front of them as a carrot all of last season to drive them. Of course, the Dolphins taking the Patriots out in the last week, got them that bye week. Now they've got the Steelers driving them. Maybe it's exactly what they need to stay sharp and to play at a high level all the way through. The Steelers, you mentioned, being undefeated. Listen, at 10-0, I remember we were talking about this with the Chiefs at 3 or 4-0. They're at 10-0, like, and still nobody's kind of talking about an undefeated season. Now, maybe it's this Ravens game on a short week, get the sweep on the Ravens. That's going to put it up. But when, you know, what kind of serious conversation should there be about the Steelers going undefeated against Ravens, football team, at Bills, at Bengals, Colts, at Browns?
Well, first of all, they're going to be favored in every game, right? I mean, so for Pittsburgh not to do it, it would be an upset. And it's funny because I think we're at the point of the season. I talked about this on my podcast today that I just got done recording about 2 hours ago, the Adam Schefter podcast, if you'll allow me to plug it there, sir.
Sure.
But basically, I had a whole conversation about this and the Steelers and laid out the schedule and looked at it. And as I said on the podcast, having covered the Denver Broncos 1998 team that went 13-0 before it lost a game, I think that the later you get in the season – and I know this from having watched it and lived it firsthand, the later you get in the season, the more challenging it becomes. Each week becomes a playoff game. I don't care if you're playing at Cincinnati or at Buffalo or home for Indy or at Cleveland. Whatever it may be, you are better than the other team, but you are getting their A game. Their A game, because everybody wants to be the team that knocks off the unbeaten team. And so that's what Pittsburgh is up against. It is certainly superior to the teams it'll be playing, but it doesn't assure that it will win six games, although it's looking more and more like it will.
We're talking to Adam Schefter here in the program. The debate I had mentioned earlier on Get Up was about, you know, going back and forth. Is it Carson Wentz? Is it play calling? You know, and the answer is generally always both. It's just to what degree. You know, where is more of the blame? And maybe, hell, maybe it's 50-50. But when does that start to wear? Do they need some kind of change, be it play caller? And I can't imagine it's quarterback, but just because of the money you've got invested in Carson Wentz. But could we see some kind of change there the way we saw with the Bears?
You know, listen, as I said on the podcast, always, that was another topic. I think that if you're the Eagles and you can't win a division that is being – handed to you, gift wrapped, they're going to want blood in Philadelphia. So I don't know who pays for it. I don't know, you know, whether the coaches, the front office, the player, I don't know who does, but Philadelphia as a city, as well as it would be for most organizations, they're not going to stand for that. They're going to want blood. So I don't know how it plays out other than it's not trending in a favorable way.
Yeah. No, it's one, like when you can't eliminate the teams that are having the struggles and are so early in a rebuild, you've got to really look in the mirror, and it will be interesting to see how that one plays out. Meanwhile, I can tell you Colts people I know, Colts fans I know, will tell you Frank Reich was the key to the Eagles' Super Bowl victory. They're very happy with Frank Reich. And how different is the temperature now around Indianapolis? It seems that Phillip Rivers has either gotten familiar with the system or sold out to it, you know, maybe more of a game manager instead of trying to make plays at an advanced stage. When you see the difference between the way Wentz is playing and Phillip Rivers, who a lot of people had given up on for dead not long ago, you got to be impressed with what Frank Reich's been able to do.
Well, you know what? That team is the anti-Philadelphia team so far. Frank Reich comes from there, but they are just tough and gritty and find a way. And that's what that Colts team does every week now. Like, they are just very impressive. They are very impressive. And I just – they're a tough out. And they play Pittsburgh along the way. So, like, I think Pittsburgh beats them. But I don't know that it's – you know, like I said, they just find a way, the Colts do, to play with everybody they play with. Everybody.
Yeah, but
so it's not going to be a surprise if they find a way to win that division, even if Tennessee might be a better team.
How about the matchup tonight? Bucks and Rams. Bucks have really struggled in prime time. Rams, you know, got that collar hung around them that all they could do is beat the NFC East. They've done a little more than that. They are 2-3 and played tough teams. Both these teams right now, if the playoffs were today, would be in the playoffs. Neither one of them can lose their way out of a playoff spot with tonight's game. So is this just a measuring stick, or is it more important for one team than the other?
I think all these games become measuring sticks, Sharon. And, again, I think the Rams are a team that we haven't talked a lot about. You know, we've talked about the Seahawks, we've talked about the Cardinals even, but we haven't talked a lot about the Rams. They kind of fell off the radar after last year. So I think this is their chance to kind of get back on the radar. We'll see if they can do that. The Bucks, we've talked an awful lot about. We know what the deal is. You know, so it should be a great matchup. I think it's one of the best Monday Night Football matchups we have left this season.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I would agree wholeheartedly. It is coming up tonight. You'll hear it here on 810. You can see it on ESPN. Rams, 4-point underdogs at Tampa Bay. We're talking to Adam Schefter. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. Who carves the turkey in the Schefter household?
We'll order it in, and so they'll carve it from the person who carves it is wherever we order it in from.
I like it. That's a man after my own heart.
Yeah.
All right, who wins the AFC South? We've got a tie at the top with the Colts and Titans right now. Who ends up winning that?
Like I said, the Colts are a gritty team. Those are two gritty teams, right? The Colts already beat them in Tennessee. They played this week, so I'll go with the Colts being that they've already beat them, and they get them at home now.
What is your favorite Thanksgiving side dish?
I would probably go with the stuffing. I love stuffing. I mean, very, very, very good. You know, can't go wrong with that, Sharon.
I agree. And right now, if for whatever reason he would stop playing this moment, is Travis Kelce a Hall of Famer?
I think yes. I think he has helped redefine the position. I love what he's done. The guy's a total stud. He's been a difference maker. And, yes, Travis Kelce is on his way to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Adam, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much. We appreciate, you know, all that you do. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll be watching tonight on Monday Night Football.
And likewise, sir, and happy Thanksgiving to you and to everybody in the Kansas City area.
The Program with Soren Petro.
We call it a water cooler show.
Because the next day in the offices, people gather around the water coolers to talk about it.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Joe's Kansas City burnt end of the hour question and subsequent
right.
answer. The Rams, as a franchise, Seren, are 1-5 against Tom Brady all time. When did the one win come?
When they didn't beat him in the Super Bowl.
Either time.
That's correct. 0-2. When did the Rams get Tom Brady? When Tom Brady played, this isn't like a trick question that they beat Matt Cassel when he was on the shelf.
No, he was the starter and finished the game. He played all of the game.
I have no idea. No idea. Like I'll say his first year as a starter.
It was his first year as a
yes!
starter. Week 10. Of 2001, Brady's first year as a starter. I'm buying you all the meals today. Joe's Kansas City for Petro. How was the good sense?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. It was great. Roast chicken, a foot-long double meat, no cheese, standard dress, plus pickles, extra pickles, black olives, spicy mustard, mayo. I'll go a little mayo on there. Bell peppers. And green peppers, thank you.
That sounds good. And then tonight from Joe's, Rocket Pig,
yeah,
rings
Rocket Pig,
and
fries.
And
yes.
I'll probably bring you some gumbo because I think it's the most underrated thing on the menu, and it's a little bit cool tonight. It'd be a nice treat.
It would be a nice treat. I'll take it. I look forward to it. You can get your Joe's Kansas City Barbecue with the app. Easiest way to get it, curbside to go. And don't forget the Kansas City Barbecue Store, man. You got somebody who likes to grill, smoke meat, is going to be out all year round. Listen, get to the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Just get a gift card if you want to go easy. Let them do the deciding. Or just head over there. So many great gift ideas. It's where I got my grill. It's where I got my utensils. It's where we go for sauces and rubs. Check it out. It's the Kansas City Barbecue Store at 119th and Stringline Road. And remember, you can send Joe's anywhere in the country as well. Do that at joeskc.com. Our thanks to Adam Schefter joining us there in the program. We've had a lot of Chiefs conversation today. I haven't had a lot of talk about the rest of the league. Do you have anything, Jed, that was the number one thing that came out of yesterday's games? Anything that you know, you're like, holy cow, or wow, this team sucks, or you know, anything that jumped at you?
There were a lot of really good games. I was appreciative that the Chiefs were on Sunday Night Football so that I was kind of just able to take in the day of and not really have to focus in on one game. This will sound like a foolish statement. I'm still not sold on a team that's 10-0 as the best team in football. The Steelers, I know they're very good defensively, and Big Ben's a seasoned, experienced quarterback. They have good wide receiving weapons. James Conner, good running back. Benny Snell to spell him. But I'm not buying it. I think that they're one of the good, you know, like really good teams, but I don't think they're as good as the Chiefs. I'd probably even, if Philip Rivers is going to play smart Alex Smithian football, which I don't know if he's capable of, but it would seem like at any point in his career, this would be the time. I think even maybe the Colts are better than them.
Yeah, I think that might be the case when it's all said and done. Ben Roethlisberger's got great weapons, but I don't know if there's much left on the fastball there. So I think if you know, the Chiefs' depth of corners, I would think, although they certainly didn't look fantastic in this last game, but they didn't get any pressure. I don't think the Steelers' offensive line is what it used to be. I'm with you. Listen, there are a number of teams that can beat the Chiefs in the playoffs, but I don't think there's any of them that are going to be favored against the Chiefs. But let's see what they do down the stretch. If they're disappointing, then maybe those spreads will look a little different. I'll tell you what the biggest takeaway was for me. Suicide pools, where you got to pick one team every week to win. Right, and you in ours you cannot reuse. So once a team's been used, you can't use it again. We're still alive, and we had locked and loaded all week, just preloaded from a couple weeks ago because we preload in case we get busy and don't get a team in. We don't want to get, you know, stuck with. I think you get one that's basically the biggest loser. You get the biggest dog, or something like that. And of course they got to win outright. We had the Vikings preloaded, and we've kind of charted out where we think we'll go each week. We wave that off and plug the Chiefs in. And I'm going to tell you, right, we were thrilled when the Cowboys upset the Vikings. That took out like a third to 40% of the field that was left in just that one game. Would have loved the Jets to take out the Chargers. But both of us agreed, when Mahomes got the ball, which about a minute 40, whatever to go, we both are like, in the bag. In the bag. We are good. We are moving on. And thank you to the Kansas City Chiefs, we are.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
Tom Brady goes tonight on Monday Night Football. He has 18 career wins on Monday Night Football, third most all time. Who are the two players ahead of him? Great food from Jazz is yours if you know.